Hello and welcome back to another season of Slay, second language acquisition for everyone. If not fourth season, at least fourth semester. But you got me, Bill, here. He, him.
Benjamin, he, him. And who is this other person on our screen, William?
Hello, gays.
Hi, gay.
Hi. We got John. Oh, gosh. Cowart, right? I always read it. Yeah.
Cowart. Cowart. Either one.
How do you introduce yourself?
It's supposed to be Cowart, but you know, Cowart. It's so close to coward that I actually don't mind when people say Cowart. Yeah, that sounds cooler.
Yeah, I'm always scared of calling you a coward.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Hi, John Cowart. We are happy to have John Cowart on our podcast today. You may know him as an expert in classroom management for the acquisition-driven, instruction-focused classroom. But we know John Cowart as a cool guy, Slay person, with lots of expertise about language teaching. So we're going to let you introduce yourself. John, tell our audience a little bit about you, what you do, and what you've done.
Yeah. So, yeah, I am a career educator. I went to school to be a teacher, and then that's what I did. I was a high school Spanish teacher for 10 years. Mostly in, actually, no, my whole teaching career was in Memphis, Tennessee. And then, yeah, as you said earlier, betrayed. I betrayed everyone by becoming an administrator. I was an assistant principal for 6 years, and it was a job. It was interesting. No, I actually loved many parts of it, but my heart has always been in language teaching and language acquisition. Currently, I'm actually working for an education consulting company, and what I spend my days doing is meeting with principals and school district leaders who are struggling, facing turnaround, facing state takeover, facing lots of issues. And I help them design professional development plans. And as you can imagine, most of it is on, you know, culture, classroom management, behavior. So it's not my favorite topic, but I got really good at it because teaching in inner city Memphis, you have to be good at that or you don't end up teaching there for long. But I also still, on my little side gig, do a lot with the language acquisition community. Just last year, I went to Maine and I was the keynote presenter for TCI Maine with Skip Crosby out there. And then before that, I was at Michigan, the Mitten. I did some workshops over there and periodically get invited to speak and do guest appearances. I teach a monthly, not really monthly, but I teach an online class for language teachers that's specific to classroom management. So the thought being, you know, math teachers get to show a formula and then give kids a computer for 40 minutes to go practice their math or whatever. And language teachers, we don't get that luxury. We have to stand up. We have to entertain them. We have to keep their attention. We have to have whole class conversations. That opens it up to really challenging classroom management things. But one thing I always try to weave into my classroom management is the idea that you can't have your instruction separate from that. Your lesson plan, your ability to teach with acquisition affects your classroom management. You can't just have rules, procedures, and do good and then suck at teaching. You have to. And so one of the big, big things I always promote in my online class is TPR. And I always tell my participants, my students, even when I go to these conferences and it's my classroom management session, I always say, if you aren't using TPR in your class, especially in the beginning to meet your kids, you're missing a huge opportunity to build culture, build systems, build routines, and get kids on their journey to language acquisition. So of course, when you asked me to talk about TPR, I was like, yes, finally. I love talking about anything besides, I love talking about classroom management, but I love talking about the actual like content and actual use that, because that is intertwined with how good of a manager you are. So yeah, that's me. And that's what I do.
Mega Slay. That is indeed why we brought John here to talk about TPR, Total Physical Response. As a sidebar to John's introduction to himself, we'll link his blog on our show notes, as well as we'll promote it next time John opens up a cohort for his classroom management course. We will make sure that everyone has access to that and knows where to get signed up. But yes, we have brought John here today to talk about TPR, Total Physical Response, which was would we describe it as like a method and an activity, perhaps, coined by James Asher in the 60s. In its original form was teaching students language orally through the use of commands, so physical commands. And, you know, the assessment was looking at the kids, are they doing the things I'm telling them to do, which you model and then slowly remove the modeling, recombine the commands in many different ways to build their ear for the language. The use of TPR in world language classes has expanded over time to include just attaching gestures to words and phrases and structures as a way to make them more memorable. We'll get a little bit into why that is as part of the article. So basically, using gestures, using movement as a way to encode language in learners' brains. So let's talk TPR gaslighting. Where are some things, Bill and John, that have gone awry when attempting to use TPR in our classrooms?
I know how it is to do TPR. However, my consistency in planning for it at the beginning of the year, asking students to do gestures along with me, like outside of like a what I would think of as like a introduction to the gestures, and like I might have them do that, but I don't ask them to continue doing it, which I think would be more beneficial to keep them still doing it. But that's it, and this is kind of a girl boss, but just today I was ranting about, like, you know, just being in shambles, and a student did the vocal control gestures from the Senor Wooly video that we talked about when Jim was on, and I was like, ha, it stuck. Like, it wasn't just the gesture, it was the language too. And so that's just like a cool thing that when you're consistent with it and when you do it well, it's real powerful.
Yeah. When I taught, I used to use a song by Juliet Neas called Me Voy. And the chorus is Me Voy, which means I'm leaving. Que las, what a shame, but goodbye. Me Voy, I'm saying goodbye to you. And I would teach them the gestures, you know, Me Voy. And I was like, driving my car and it came on my Apple and I just started like doing the gestures, like without even realizing I was doing it. And then I was like, oh, I do remember that song. And I remember the students for a brain break, I'd put it on and they would all just go crazy doing the gestures. It's very, very powerful, very powerful.
And I'm with Bill in the underutilization in that I give feedback surveys regularly when I'm good to just remind myself, like, to give the feedback surveys asking if the students feel like the language in class is comprehensible, if they feel the teacher cares about them, they know what's going on during class. And then I have open-ended things about what has the teacher done that has helped you learn the language and what is something that they might do that would help you learn it even better. And it is always gestures that comes up as something that the kids love, absolutely love the gestures that he does to support us understanding. And so I like Bill, get to the end of my year and it's something that students can also articulate is useful to them, is helpful to them in comprehension. And it sounds like production as well. And just forgetting to do TPR is another thing.
Yeah. I've got another gaslight, like reluctant students not knowing what to do with people, with the students that are just too cool to do it. And like trying to explain to them, like, I know, like, let's try to be chalant for once. And like, actually, like maybe try something that's a little challenging or weird, but I'm just asking you to trust me.
Yeah. I remember like one of my first days of teaching and 30 kids in the room. And I'm like, you know, levántense, you know, I did a poor job giving the instructions, but immediately I was like, oh crap. I didn't like, what do you do when you tell the class to levántense and four kids don't? And not to talk more about classroom management, but I'm a big stickler of if you ask your students to do something and they don't do it, well, then from that point forward, all of your directions become suggestions that you can opt out of if you want to. So I'm a big stickler. If you are going to ask your student to do something, you better be ready to kind of die on that hill, right? Otherwise, don't ask them to do it. And it's okay, right? And so I sat down and Grant, I don't know how to pronounce his last name. I went to one of his sessions years ago, and he said, like, must haves, would like to have, and fine if we don't have it, as far as like student behaviors. And I sat down and asked myself, do I really need all these students doing the gestures? The research would tell us that that's more powerful if they actually do the gestures. But it also tells us that they will actually learn quite well, even if they are just paying attention. Even if they sit and just don't do anything, but they're at least paying attention, they will still learn. So the compromise that I learned too late was give them other ways to engage besides doing the gestures. So I started with manipulatives, right? I would print off pictures of the, like the stick figures, right? Of someone standing up, touching their head, touching their nose. And I would provide them for students and say, if you do not want to stand up and do these things with me, I am not going to force you, but you must at least lift the card up of the picture when I say the word. So if I say, you have to find a picture of someone touching their mouth, then you have to hold it up, right? You can do this, you can do that, but you have to do something. That's the hill I'm going to die on. You have to do something, but you don't have to do the gestures. And in an ideal world, they would all do the gestures, but they're high school kids. And well, mine were. Elementary school kids may be different, but that's where you're like the language acquisition and the realities of teaching K-12 public schools like really kind of intertwine, is that you've got to be prepared to provide students the other ways up. And so, but my first year, I was like, I'm going to do this. And then the kids who didn't do it, I was like, I don't know what to do. Like, what am I going to keep yelling at them? Like, levantate, levantate. You know, and the kids are like, I don't want to do it. I'm like, oh, okay. That sucked.
Another issue that I have run into is the like not fading the scaffold, essentially. I think that's like an overarching issue for many teachers across a variety of domains. Not, you know, initially in the initial stages of TPR, you do the gesture yourself as you say it to the class. So when you're saying stand up, you're standing up. When you're saying touch your nose, you're also touching your nose. I just got into the trap of like, all right, we're doing TPR. And then essentially I'm doing the stance routine in front of the class and maybe all the kids are doing it, but I'm maybe also focusing too much on myself doing it that I'm not taking the data that I need to take, which is, are the students responding to the commands, which shows me that they understood it and that they heard and comprehended that sort of thing. And having more brain space to observe everybody because I was not, you know, being like, I have to do the gesture too. Like, so silly. And having more brain space to deal with students who are not.
Yeah. The very first time I ever coached a teacher on TPR, where I, like my very first like AP coaching gig, she was a Spanish teacher. She was highly motivated. She was awesome. And she wanted to try it for the first time. I'm like, okay, cool. So I sat in the back of her room. She would, before she would even say the word, she would like start standing up and she would say, levántense, as she was saying it, right? And then she would say, cabeza, right? So all the kids were doing the gestures, but exactly like you said, Ben, she didn't move to the next step, which is hesitate, right? Which is such an important step. And so I was trying to coach her on it. And so finally I said, okay, here's what I need you to do. I need you to say the word first. I need you to count to three, and then I need you to do the gesture. And then she started figuring out her kids didn't know what the hell she was saying, right? They were just doing the gestures that she was doing. She was like, baila. And the kids were like, cool. I don't know what that means, but I guess we're doing this. So I said, say baila, and then do the gesture. And that little tweak went from, you know, they're participating, having fun, but they're not learning anything, to they're getting it now, they're acquiring it, and now you see how slow you have to go. That's the other gaslight, is slow down. TPR is very boring for the teacher. It is very, very boring. I figured that out the first time I did it in English to an ESL class, when I was like, stand up, right? Because in Spanish, like, I learned Spanish as a second language, so but when I was doing English, I was like, gosh, this is slow. But to the kids, it wasn't. Many years ago, I was doing a workshop, and I forget where this was, but I was doing a TPR workshop in person, and my session was TPR. And there was like 40 teachers in the room. And Annabelle Williamson, who's La Maestra Loca, she was a participant in this, and she came up and did some cool stuff. But I was like, you know, most of these teachers in here are Spanish or French teachers. And there was a teacher there who taught a native language, Native American language. I don't remember what it was. And I said, I want to try something. And I said, would you volunteer for something? I said, I want to give you three words: stand up, sit down, and dance. But I want you to say it in you know, your language. I want you to teach it to us. And so she did. And a room full of language teachers struggled to catch on to those three words, right? Because that's a very different language than what our ears are tuned to and used to. And so she would say, stand up. And like, and the, you know, and after like 5 minutes, we were still stuck on those three words, right? So I had to kind of pause. And I was like, do y'all feel this? Do y'all feel how much work this is to get through three words? This is what our students are hearing, right? This is what they're going through. And so the biggest flight is going too fast and thinking that like, oh, it's, you know, right? Trying to fit 25 words in a single lesson, right? That was another big gaslight I had in my first couple of years. I just learned to cut it down to 10, right? You can do a lot with 10 words. You can do, you know, and make sure you have a good mix. If you try to do 10 nouns or 10 verbs, you're going to have a miserable time. You have like three good verbs, three good nouns, three good adjectives, and that can be a beautiful, exciting, interesting hour-long lesson. And you're going to feel like you're not teaching a lot. You're going to feel like you're going really slow, but your students are really, really going to appreciate that. And so it's a good tip.
I love hearing the tip anywhere it comes from for the tip to slow down. It's something that I need to hear myself all the time, and that I have a student teacher this year, and I was just like, we just need to go slower. Like it's chill if we go slower. It's all new sounds to them. I love that. I would say the one other thing is that, and this also kind of relates into speed, is that when you get up to do it, if we treat teaching as like this like performance that is like fun and cool for us and for the kids all the time, and it's this dynamic back and forth, sometimes I think we need to go off book, like it has to be a memorized performance. And I've had historical struggles with coming up with novel commands or chains of commands, because I would be like, okay, I need to target these words, but I myself am trying to remember what the words are and then remember to recombine them, but then also manage the class and move around and remember the steps of TPR all at the same time. And it changed my life when I bought the Bertie Siegel Cook book about teaching language through gestures, and then just started copying down the lesson plans in German onto a page and holding it in front of myself. There is no penalty for holding a resource, teachers, for that yourself, that you can look at. So I was literally just checking them off. I was like, all right, we've hit, you know, touch your nose with your right finger like a bunch of times. So like, that's cool. I can check that one off. And, or, you know, just as a way to keep it sequenced and then jump around. And yeah, we don't have to be off book. And it helped me go slower because I could come back to the things that weren't going, you know, I would like, you know, hit something for a while and then come back to it. And then, you know, cycle through the words a little bit more efficiently than if I felt I had to like come up with class continuing movement all the time.
Yeah.
I want to say, I know that this is the gaslight segment. I have heard so many girl bosses like inspiring. Like I've got all ideas running through my head already. So thanks for being here.
Yeah. Ben, you said something that stuck with me about we approach it as like a performance, right? Like this, I'm doing this and this. The big advantage of TPR is you get in the moment data, right? Like we're teachers. Our goal is to help these students acquire language. It's not about us. It's about them. And how quickly are they catching on? And we know through the research, there's no right or wrong answer. Everyone acquires language with a healthy brain. Everyone can acquire language, and some go, you know, acquire at different speeds. Jason Fritz, another one of my big gurus, he used to say, like, I'm not teaching a lesson plan, I'm teaching the students. And if we don't get through the story, right? He's talking about storytelling, but he's always like, I used to want, and this was me, I want to get to the end of the story because there's 5 minutes left. I'm like, okay, let's speed up, right? He's like, no, like, if you are telling a story in a language class, all you do for 45 minutes is introduce a character and describe a problem, and that's it. And then the bell rings. But you've held their attention and it's been interesting. That's a fantastic lesson because that means you went deep. You were repetitive. You kept their interest. And okay, fine. We didn't even get to the plot yet. We didn't get to the first location of the story. Cool. See you tomorrow, right? This afternoon, I'll kind of rearrange my lesson plan for tomorrow. We'll pick up where we left off. It's the same thing with the TPR lesson. And that's where I got hung up on. I got 25 words and then they're grouped in all these groups and they're spiraled and everything is planned out. Well, we got through 10 words and they're still stuck, right? Or I get to the stop phase, right? That's the really, really important phase where I cross my arms and I stand in front and I just keep giving commands and I don't do anything. And if they can't do it, I'm not moving on. I'm going to go back to the words that they're stuck on, and we're going to figure out different ways. And sometimes I don't have a plan for it. Sometimes I don't have a novel command for it. So sometimes I look around the room, I'm like, okay, let's try it this way. Go over there and grab the big yellow book and put it on his head. Let's see if we can do that, right? And then once they get it, great, we can move on.
Love. Bill, you got anything else?
I do, but I think it would take us off on a tangent.
Your self-control is admirable. Then let us ungatekeep an article that we read as in preparation for this episode that is about TPR. So I was turned onto an article from the Russian Language Journal, which I am not a regular reader of, but I think I was tipped off to it by Michelle Whaley, I want to say. So hi, Michelle, friend of the pod. She tipped us off with this article that was about TPR that was called From Gesture to Coded Knowledge, Rediscovering and Redefining TPR When Teaching Russian Motion Verbs in an Outdoor Classroom. This was by Elena Susanna Weigand, who works at the Sewanee University of the South. Did I say that right? Is that a name? Is it Sewanee?
Shout out. That's my neck of the woods.
Oh, really?
Sewanee.
It's late.
We call it Sewanee. Sewanee. We don't pronounce the E. Sewanee.
Sewanee. Look, Mom, I'm native. Sewanee. So this article was about, this was like a kind of more of a practice-based article, but with some research citations that I thought made it really interesting about a professor. And it was kind of the genesis of this article came from the experiences this professor had during the 2020-2021 pandemic year of teaching, where like universities were having classes in tents outside, and they, you know, like you're like go to your instructional barn where everyone is like 8 feet apart and like whatever. And so she was trying to find ways to keep the students physically engaged and couldn't just do the turn and talk sort of activities that we're used to. And how could we get students lots of languages in a setting like that? Which I thought was, you know, not to bring our minds back to that, those couple years right in there that were whack, but here we are. But she came out of it with a lot of insights about the ways that movement influences language acquisition. So the article kind of begins with a literature review of the various aspects of TPR, like where it's come from and what exactly it is. So the initial version, she cites about the initial version of TPR from James Asher from the 60s, from 66 and 69, talking about pairing an imperative command said by the instructor with a silent physical action performed by the students. And this played nicely into a theory that was coming around at the time about how the more often a memory is relation is traced, the stronger the memory connection will be and the more likely it will be remembered. And also ties to later research about how things embedded in psychomotor skills can help you encode meaningful language pretty strongly. So it was a way to build those memory traces and get repetitions that became lasting and durable without explicitly targeting grammatical rules. And so this is like an implicit method of language teaching, getting language into students' brains via these commands and via oral language. She then cites some research about TPR increasing comprehension and retention of vocabulary in student learners, that it works great for adults and kids because of mirror neuron theory, which says that if you see someone do an action, your brain's neurons actually light up as if you were doing that thing itself. So if you see someone raise their left hand, your brain parts that lift your left hand light up in a similar way. She cited some research saying that there have been like positive to mixed effects in real settings. But as we've talked about, there can be an unevenness in implementation and student readiness and a variety of factors. So take that with every grain of salt, as always. But that there was a lot of research that points to TPR helping develop listening skills, word retention, and actually reduce anxiety in speaking because they feel confident with the language that they have acquired. She goes into this specifically about how TPR can be used to teach Russian verbs of motion, which are apparently a particular sticky point of Russian. I don't know about that. So I'm just going to say she said that and then move on to the next part, which is talking about how we can more generally use our psychomotor system to try to connect language to our bodies. And that there's research showing that making gestures along with new vocabulary in any language helps with retention of that vocabulary, helps concepts stick better. And so how can we get that embedded into our body, get language really embedded into our bodies so we can draw upon it as easily as lifting our hands and arms? Where she kind of goes on a wild adventure, which I thought was very interesting, was the ways that we can use the principles of TPR, of hearing command, of using language that is connected with movement and immediate feedback, like John said earlier, in things like role-playing games. So things like board games where you like roll and move around, like think a game, I don't know, like a Dungeons and Dragons sort of game where you're like going places, making decisions. And it could, or you could use a much more limited board, something more like a Clue, I guess, and discuss a couple different games that exist for Russian that allow people to go on little trips in the Russian-speaking world. And you have to do things and be able to give instructions to each other about how to get from place to place. And you know, again, the feedback is coming whether or not the person goes to the actual place correctly. So, and she also talked about a fashion runway project in which there were people modeling clothes and then doing like a like designer interview after, which I found very sweet. And so, like, who doesn't love a little fashion show? This article, again, this is a practice-based article, and so there are connections to the research that already exists. It wasn't necessarily presenting new research, but it really kind of hit home for me, and as we've kind of been touching on in this conversation, how powerful TPR is as a way to build students' ear for language, as a way for them to embed the language in a deeper level than just the surface of the brain, where it gets, you know, pushed off immediately by interesting video content from the internet later. You know, we want to get that learning so deep in the students' bodies that they, you know, just almost have, they have like a physical mental reaction to the language and can use it as a part of themselves. And there's a lot of evidence that, you know, this is something that is embodied learning, something connected to very deeply and deep in your body. So overall, my summary of this article would be that she found that there was a lot of evidence that TPR slays and that we can think about it not just in the traditional give commands, students do commands sort of ways, which is very effective. And we're excited to hear John's girl bosses about how to do that most effectively, but that you can take the principles of that and apply it to other sort of role playing and games and fun and movement in the class that really does good things for students' comprehension and language use, but also their anxiety about language, which I think in a time of anxiety and in a time of students feeling hesitant to speak about much of anything is a very helpful thing.
I want to read that article now. I'm sure it'll.
It will be in the show notes.
One big takeaway I heard from that is the transition from TPR to literacy. In my TPR workshop, so many people are like, "Do you just do TPR for an hour? Like, do you just do co-?" No, right? You break it up. You introduce some words via TPR. You do some activities like some fly swatter games. But the end of the lesson is always transitioning it to literacy. So holding up cards with the words on it that you just said, right? But putting it in the third person instead of the command, right? Having a picture of a boy standing up and talking to your students about it and doing circle questioning. Is the boy standing up or is he sitting down? So they heard levántense all day and now they're hearing el chico say levanta. And so immediately on day one of Spanish one and your introduction to Spanish, you're immediately hearing the differences and starting to pick up those differences. And then we have sentences on the board, right? The boy stands up, the boy throws a pencil, right? All the TPR words we use that day are now in a sentence. And then we do TPR reading where we're just silent and I have a laser pointer and we're just, and then we get to the word and they have to do the action, right? And if I point to a word and no one does the action, because I mean, Spanish is an easy example because it's so phonetic, but if they don't do it, I just say the word out loud in Spanish. And now they're hearing it and seeing the connection, right? And that's how I introduce my students to literacy. And that's where it sticks. That's where they start to understand the grammar. That's where you do pop-up grammar between levántense, say levanta, bailen versus and that's like and that's how I don't know any other way to do it. That's how I introduce my students to how to read in the language. And so when we get to a book, when we get to a chapter book, right, they're like, what? Like, why are I don't know how to read. We get to the first page and spoiler alert, I backwards planned all my TPR. This would be more girl boss, but I backwards planned all my language for the past 3 months to this book, right? So, oh my God, I know all these words. I'm like, yeah, it's almost as if I know what the hell I'm doing. And now after the first, 4 months of their language, we've read an entire book and we've comprehended it. And people always are like, how do you do that? How do you get there with just commands? Like, well, it is more than commands. And I really appreciate in that article how they talk about it's not just commands. Like, I hate when people say, oh, TPR is just commands. Just do that until you're out of commands and then move on to something else. Like, no, it is your introduction to this language. And I'm steadfast. If you're not doing TPR on day one with your students, I think you're missing a big opportunity. I think you're making life hard on yourself. The anxiety piece. Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, it's not, like, easily not just commands. Like, you might introduce the word with a command, but, like, I'm still doing the gesture when I remember. When I use the word in class, so, like, if I teach TN, he or she has, and then I point to myself and then do this gesture, tengo, like, they're also getting the different forms from that, too. So, like, it might just be introduced as commands. There's so much more you can do, so many places that you can do the gestures to build on, like, their initial understanding of the word.
Yeah. When I lost my train of thought. Anxiety. They talk about that in the article a lot. One thing that I think language teachers oftentimes forget is that biologically our ears are tuned to our native language and the phonemes that exist within that language. So when we hear a language that has sounds and phonemes that don't exist in English, our ears, like physically, like biologically, struggle to pick up those sounds. I remember when I was a grad student, we had a graduate student office, and there was one of my best friends was Turkish. And we would sit in the office and do TPR on each other. And that sounds weird. Right? We did TPR on each other in the office.
The Slate podcast is a safe place to be who you are.
There we go. But I would say, how do you say basket in Turkish? And she would go, I'm like, you didn't say anything. She goes, no. I'm like, can you say that slower? She goes, and I was like, are you, my ear like physically could not, I was like, French was like this for me when I was trying to practice French. Right? Like that sound doesn't exist in English. And so the ear has, so with TPR, you're giving students that introduction at a very low stakes environment, right? Just listen and watch me and do the actions. Don't repeat. Don't try to, don't repeat what I'm saying. Just do the actions. And they're getting so much repetition. And over time, your ear will build up the muscle. It'll physically build up the ability to capture those phonemes. I would imagine in German, there's probably sounds that, right? Which actually funny exists in Spanish, right? The rojo, like the Bach. But that's another big piece to it. So when we talk about anxiety in a language class, a lot of it starts with just, I can't hear what you're saying. Like, what did you say? And so when they get so much repetition with those words and phonemes, they become more comfortable with it. So when you do transition in the storytelling and more contextualized teaching and reading, they've already had that on-ramp and they already feel more confident in it.
A question about that, because I think, like, you know how you ask students to record a presentation or a video or something, and you can obviously tell that they're reading because they put, even though they've heard the words pronounced well over and over and over, now they're just reading it like they're reading their first language. Just a little funny thing that I thought about recently. But, like, yeah, I think that made me kind of think about, like, the repeat after me kind of stuff, though. Like, no, you're not hearing it correctly yet. You're not going to be able to produce it perfectly yet. So just...
And I intentionally say, don't repeat after me, right? I love Karen Nolan. She always says, we don't do repite favor. We don't do that in here. No repite.
Well, great. Gatekeeping that article, Benjamin.
Thanks, Benjamin. Shall we girl boss into the sunset? Again, we brought Senor TPR himself, who's been apparently TPRing with colleagues across the world for years. We in private offices, in public spaces, we would love to know, like, how can we do this well? And we kind of, like, let slip some of these things already in Gaslight and Gatekeep, but what are some of the ways that we can really do TPR well to get the most juice for the squeeze out of this this method, this activity, these, you know, sequences of activities?
Yeah, well, the first thing I always try to tell, if you haven't ever tried TPR, the first thing I always suggest is start with like a 5-minute portion of your lesson. Don't try to go in and do a whole hour long lesson on it, because you want to set yourself up for success also. It's like, find like 5 minutes in a lesson and then gradually, you know, add 10 minutes and then try it. And then one day try to do like a full lesson. But the first thing I always start with lesson planning. So what I do, you know, the very first thing I do is I try to make a list of the words that are TPR-able. Not every word is TPR-able. And I make a distinction. I know like recently kind of meshed these two together, but I make a distinction between words that are TPR and then TPR gestures. TPR ideally is, there should be no need to negotiate meaning, right? If I say toca la boca, you know, I'm touching your head, touch your nose, touch your mouth, stand up, walk, dance. Words that there shouldn't be any confusion. Like tiene is an example, or puede, or va, right? Goes, has, once is a good one, right? Once. I do the gesture all the time, right? I, you know, every time I say quiere in my class, I do the gesture. But if all I did was quiere and did this, well, some kids might understand that means once. Some might think it means beg. Some might mean it says please. Some might think I'm, you know, jerking off a ghost. I don't know. So I make a list of words that are TPR-able, meaning they are concrete. There's right. And then I put them in categories, nouns, you know, based on parts of speech. And then from there, I try to create interesting combinations for like a daily lesson. And I said like 10, you know, maybe 10 to 15 words with a good group of nouns, good group of verbs, good group of adjectives, different places. You know, I'll have a picture of a bathroom, a picture of a hospital, you know, things around the room so you can actually go and do some stuff. And then the key thing is to group them into groups of three, maybe four, but typically at groups of three words at a time. I call them sets of words. So the stay one is stand up, sit down, walk, dance. That's four, but that's okay because stand up, sit down, kind of. And I work with those four words just over and over and over and over again. Model, hesitate, stop. I introduce them by modeling, and then I hesitate, and then once I get to the point where I can say, baila, levántate, baila, camina, and everyone's doing it without hesitation, great. They've got that set of words done, check. Not really. We got to come back to it, and we always got to review, and we got to spiral those four words later in the lesson. But I'm going to move on to the next set, right? Touch your head, touch your mouth, touch your mouth, right? When I can get to the point where they can all do it without me modeling, cool, done, check. Then we combine those two sets. So now we've got seven words. Stand up, sit down, walk, dance, touch your mouth, touch your head, touch your nose. So I guess eight words because touch. And now I've got to combine those, right? And now I've got to do some commands that combine those. And again, model, hesitate, stop. Then I'll add the word and. Stand up and do this. Do this and do that. And once I get to the point where verbally I can give those commands and the students with 90% accuracy can do it without hesitation, great. That's a lot of words. Okay. And in 20 minutes, they can do it, but their brains are, you know, are struggling at that point. It's a lot of right brain. So then you have to do some activities. No more new words for another 10 minutes. We're just going to practice with those words in different ways. Fly swatter activity. I like to do, you know, hold up two pictures and I say one of them and they point, and then I do some circle questioning with them. There's lots of different, like, I call them processing activities, but it feels more like left brain schoolwork, which is fine, right? Like a worksheet with the words and match the pictures and walk around the room with a gallery walk. I'll put like stick figure pictures around the room and give the kids the words in Spanish. They have to match them or whatever. It's a fun one, right? Whatever. But just something that they can help process what they just learned, right? That's about 30 minutes total. And then once you feel comfortable and you've checked for understanding and they've got those, then you add three more words. Three new words in isolation. I'm not adding in those seven words. Three new words of touch the floor, touch your desk, touch a book, right? Those three words. Once they got those three down, now we're combining, right? From that point forward, every time I introduce three new words, I'm combining and spiraling with the older words. And I think that is the practice where you can kind of build it up. And you'll get done with your first day and the kids will know all the words and it's going to feel wonderful and it's going to feel great. And they're going to come in day two and they're not going to know anything. It's going to feel like it anyway. It's going to feel like it anyways, right? So you have to be prepared to review. review for 20 minutes what we did yesterday in different ways. That's the other thing. The brain craves novelty. So you can't just do gestures, right? They will get bored out of their minds. So prepare to do different ways of practicing that vocabulary. And then you add, and then from there it's a slow roll. You're adding a few words at a time, spiraling and everything we just, and that's where the literacy piece really helps you as a teacher, because it's so hard to keep track. You know, you get to the end of the first week and gosh, I've taught 50 words or 40 words. That's a lot to keep track of. So that's where the literacy comes in, right? Sentences that have all that weekly vocabulary that the kids are reading, drawing pictures, matching pictures to sentences. Some of my kids start to write at that point already, which is great. But that in a nutshell is a good strong start to TPR, is the lesson planning piece with the end in mind. On Friday, here's the reading we're doing. The boy stands up, he walks to a girl, he says hello, the girl laughs at him. Everyone laughs at him. All the students laugh at the boy. The boy cries. The boy sits down. Another boy stands up and walks at the girl and yells, "Idiot!" And the whole class laughs at the girl. The girl cries. The boy and the girl look at each other and shake hands, right? End of the story. Like, whatever. That's the story I want my kids to read on Friday, week one of Spanish 1. So I'm backwards planning all that starting on day one. Sets of three, spiral, 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 review, do some fun activities, fund some games, give them some Nerf guns and put the vocab around the room and say the word in English and let them shoot the word in Spanish, right? Like fun, but really what I'm looking for is Friday, can they read and comprehend this story? And that lets me know that they've comprehended those words, they've acquired them in short term. We'll go over the weekend on Monday, we come back. What are we doing first thing Monday morning? Reviewing, right? We're reviewing that reading, we're doing some practice. My really fast processing kids who are a little bored at this point, frankly, they come to the front. Hey, you lead the lesson today. Here's a list of words, right? Not the lesson, the review. And let them do it, right? Let them say baile, right? Or whatever. And they'll say it wrong with bad pronunciation, but it's fine. And the kids, right? And then you build your weeks from there. That's in a nutshell, like the way I get it started. Now I've got a whole presentation. I've got charts and I've got, do's and don'ts, but you mentioned a good book, Bertie Siegel's book. I think that's only in Spanish? I think that's only for Spanish teachers.
Actually, the entire book is in English, the version that I got. And so I just adapted it into German. Okay. Yeah.
That's a really good one. And then James Asher's book called, I think it's called TPR World, or a good, it might just be called Total Physical
Responsibility. Something Through Actions.
His OG book.
Yeah.
And he might have written some better ones since then, but.
Learning Another Language Through Actions.
Yes.
Is what I found on Amazon.
Yeah. and the Conti Seeley and Romain.
Yep. Yeah. There's a lot of good books that give you formulas, right? Yeah. Everything I've seen is really good. So that's the girl boss, right? Is like less is more, lots and lots of repetition, lots of novelty, lots of new things. But really, it's like you're backwards planning from literacy, which is where the language sticks. And that's what we want to get to.
What are the children going to read at the end of this whole long sequence? Mm-hmm. And how rewarding too, right? Like the reward being, you've done all these processing activities, you've done the gestures and the, reviewing and spiraling and all those sort of things. And they get to read a story and enjoy it and report back, in week one or week two, I'm reading a story that's this long with this many different words. And that feels very rare, because while our textbooks are often like stuffed full of vocabulary in a way that, it sounds like, lists of words, 50 words or whatever, the way that they're expected to acquire from a textbook sequence is so antithetical to how our brain acquires language. And so being able to use vocabulary, a growing vocabulary, meaningfully soon and repeatedly meaningfully soon, feels very rewarding.
Don't get me started on textbooks.
Well, Karen Rohn had that one.
There's some good books out there now. I mean, like, I'm talking about like the standard, government issue textbook. Like, here you go.
We all know the realities of the textbook world.
Yeah. The other piece that I don't think is talked enough is how to use TPR in the upper levels. because it
yes,
is,
please.
Yeah, it is best for like language one. And my favorite job in the entire world is teaching Spanish one to freshmen. The energy, the novelty, the getting, and Ben, you said it, like day one, they don't know how to say anything. Week one, they can read a story. By the end of the year, they can do so much, and you get to see it. And then because of the nature of language learning acquisition, it kind of levels off for a long time, right? They can go from beginner to intermediate pretty quickly. And then they stay with intermediate for a pretty long time. And it actually takes them quite a while to really kind of kick it up a notch and go to the next step. That's why I hate teaching Spanish 2 and 3, because I'm like, ah. But when I do teach upper levels, I've got my slide decks up to kind of help remind me of what do I do with the upper levels. So yeah, here's some fun ones. So teaching them different ways to say things they already know. So we know like fast, rápido. So I would teach like con, right? Like something weird, like with velocity. But a lot more serious is like instead of levántense, well, actually, if you go to a lot of Latin American countries, a lot of them will say, póngase. I learned Spanish like in my first year of college, but then I studied abroad in Chile. And I remember I was like waiting from in the visa line, and they were gonna stamp my student visa, and someone came and said, yeah, póngase. And I had no idea what he was talking about. I was like, what did he just say? Something about my foot? Because it's a weird phrase, like put yourself on your feet, which is another way to say stand up, but it's very, very common. And I had never heard that before. So my Spanish 2s and 3s, instead of levántese, I'm going to say póngase, like little stuff like that. Instead of, there's other ways to say jump, right? One of my other really favorite ways with my AP classes, I actually taught AP language and culture as well. And I would do some TPR. I would teach them the country-specific vocabulary. And so instead of like, t-shirt, like camiseta in Chile, they say polera. And so like every 2 weeks, I would put a country's flag up on my wall and say, these 2 weeks, we're learning the language of this country. And I'm going to start with the everyday words that you already know how to say. But if you went to Chile, they're going to use things that are quite different. So like simple things like between camina and anda. Like I've got some up here, like in thing. Yeah. It's like Caribbean. So like a girl, they say like, una jeva. It's like instead of una chica, the bus is a fun one because in the Caribbean is wawa, but in Chile and Argentina, wawa is a baby, right? Cause of the way it's like, mm-hmm. Right. So I would do it. So like, then we would switch. And so like by the end of, 3 or 4 months, they would have some really cool language. And on the AP exam, that actually helps a lot because you see dialogue and poetry and stories. And so, those are some really fun ways to do it with the upper levels. Granted, you can't do as much.
And even as lower frequency words that are going to elevate their writing or elevate their production on those kind of standardized tests or like proficiency tests and stuff.
Yep, like body part, yeah. Right? Spanish 1, we learn, but Spanish 2 and 3, we learn how to say knuckles. We learn how to say, your funny bone. We learn how to say, your forearm, your quad, cool stuff that they're interested in knowing. And it's not, maybe high frequency, but it's TPR, it's fun. It gets them, engaged. And then you can, transition to the more contextualized stuff.
I did have a funny story about Póngase de pie. Mm-hmm. In Costa Rica, they also say parase, which was what I heard from my professor was that you might hear someone say, and it means go up in a different way. So people will laugh.
Yep.
But older people might use it.
Yep. Another one was toma asiento, take a seat. I bought a hot dog, and instead of giving me a hot dog, she gave me a piece of a ticket. And I was like, well, what do I do? And she said, told me. And I sat there and I was like, what? And she goes, sit down. And I was like, and it feels so deflating because I'm like, I know Spanish, but I don't know how to say sit down apparently. Well, that's because I learned siéntense. So my upper levels really, really like that kind of stuff. I teach them how to say crawl. I like gatear. That was a fun one. There's a lot of weird verbs and different ways of saying things. You can make it, you can add it, incorporate it into your lessons with your upper levels. because they still want to do fun stuff. They don't want to sit there and read books and, you know, do stories all day.
Oh, yours don't?
You know, one year I had a class, they were the honors, you know, they're going to be feeding the AP class, and they hated doing anything fun. They just they wanted to read. They wanted to watch documentaries. And I was kind of like, yeah, like, I'm kind of the same way. I'm like, I kind of love this. Yeah,
that's a dream.
I know.
Yeah. Got an independent study student this year. Mm-hmm. And we just got to do just that. We watched documentary, just find YouTube videos about topics and just like chit chat and like perfect. Mm-hmm. And it's all just like the boring stuff.
Yeah.
Mine are content to like, if I just let them like learn about current events, but in German, and then very occasionally throw them a bone with like a GameKit. Like, do you guys want to play GameKit in the background while my other class is doing whatever? They're like, yeah. And so they are, yeah. And you're describing basically me. It's like, oh, we could just sit there and read stuff. I'd be so into that. But no, but the truth of it is I just had this conversation with my student teacher is that like, we have to remember that like the modalities that we choose for our classes, you know, just like we talk about how we often teach the way that we were taught, especially as it relates to language. Sometimes the modalities that we choose within these newer ways, you know, newer to us ways of teaching often reflect like kind of our own interest in that. Like I choose stuff that is theatrical because I am a zany sort of person. I choose stuff that is heavily text-based and like dense text because I'm a reader. And, you know, we have to confront the realities that like, yeah, we're going to have to mix it up and text will need to be scaffolded for different readers. And there are different ways to prepare and, you know, front load vocabulary for things. That's a helpful reminder. Yeah.
My mind is flowing with ideas. I'm going to do some tomorrow, I think. I don't have anything else. I don't think I really have any girl bosses. So I do think that one maybe girl boss moment that I had with TPR was during like COVID hybrid teaching. I started making just like a video library of the gestures because I wasn't seeing students every single day. And I wasn't going to try to ask them to do anything that on their days off that one. I mean, I wasn't going to ask them to do things on their day off anyway. They were supporting their families and like going to work since they had the time. But yeah, like, and then I think Greg Gross down in Texas, I think he expanded on that a little bit too. So I think having a library of some sorts would be like interesting. So
about like a library of books or
of videos of the gestures.
Oh, I see what you mean. A video library.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And one other girl boss that is not my girl boss, but I'm going to bring up Jim again, Senior Wooly, in his recent lesson plans for his videos. He had done something they had done something in the lesson plans with TPR that I had just never considered. And it's like, I'm a silly goose because like this seems so simple, but like introduced, he had like a presentation, he had a slide deck, a word and the meaning on the slide with like an animation of the gesture. And then the next slide had a sentence with the word in it. And then on the next slide, new word, and then a new sentence. The following slide had the two gestures. And so like that was a scaffolding of TPR to literacy that I personally hadn't seen. I thought was just pretty cool.
I would say one thing that brought up like a library of gesture ideas is that I know some teachers rely on sign language dictionaries as a possible source of that sort of thing, with the enormous caveat that we need to tell our students and ourselves that we are not teaching sign language. We are not teaching American Sign Language or British Sign Language. I sometimes rely on a German sign dictionary because Germany has a sign language called Deutsch. And I am not teaching that language. Its grammar is likely different than that of spoken German. And so we just need to keep those things in mind. But if you're looking for inspiration, that can be a place to start. And I think, again, I had a kid once ask one time, like, are we also learning sign language?
I'd be like, yeah, no.
I'd be like, no, we are not. We are learning German, but using the gestures to help us understand. Again, sign languages have their own cultures and grammars and things that are often, you know, divergent
from dialects. The
spoken language that they're based off. Yeah, totally. It's a whole language, right? So they have their own specificities that are not 100% in line with the spoken languages that they align to. So with that caveat, it can be a place to start to look for gestures and ideas.
Slay. Any final thoughts?
We're just so thankful that John was able to come and talk about TPR and
let
us have his wisdom.
Yeah, this was such a treat.
Yeah,
this is my favorite topic. And like, it's because it's what I'm best at, right? We're all good at something. And I was never as good at telling stories, like the TPRS. I did it. It's powerful. It's a good, but TPR, I was just really good at it. And so I think that's why I'm like passionate about it and love it as well. But also like, it really is like the best way to on-ramp students into the language, right? Things like anxiety, build vocabulary, tune their ears. And
I think on-ramping is a great word to use for that.
Yeah. And also, you know, because I talk so much about classroom management, meeting your students for the first time, what's so vital is to build trust with them. Not just trust as in, you know, safety. I'm talking about academic trust. Like, if you listen to me, you're going to learn, you're going to be successful. But then if I start teaching a bunch of fast and you don't understand it and you fail a bunch of quizzes, well, we're going to break that trust and you're going to hate my class. You're going to hate Spanish and it's going to be a struggle all year. So starting with TPR, it's designed to make sure everyone is successful immediately. It gets trickier later with the stories and the reading. And then, and now, like, you know, students who are traditionally good at school, right? They have, you know, teacher pleasing habits. Their parents at home read to them. They're just really good at school. You know, they're going to do fine with the reading. They're going to do fine with the storytelling. They're going to do fine with the quizzes and stuff. But students who are not good at school and don't have a good relationship with school and struggle at school, they do really well at TPR because it's different. It's so out there compared to what they do. And that is so vital to get those students bought in and invested into my class. Because then when we start doing the stuff that is just a little trickier, right? Like listening to a story and comprehending it and reading books, and that I'm going to start to see their gaps, right? Like I'm always shocked after the TPR like initial unit kind of like fades away. I start to see my learning gaps. I start to see students who have like, oh, you do have an IEP. I knew you had an IEP because I was in the meetings and everything, but now I see it, right? Now I really start to see how I need to accommodate and differentiate for you. So during my story, I'm going to give you like a word bank, or I'm going to differentiate. But during TPR, it's so differentiated already. And it's so checked for understanding every 5 seconds already that all of my students find that success. And I give a quiz with all the words and the gestures. And like traditionally, they all do really well on it. And everyone feels good. And this class is easy. And that's what I want for the first, you know, for my first 6-7 weeks with my students. And then that buys me someone used a really good phrase. It just buys me some like social equity with them. So like when things get a little harder, they trust me, right? Hey, like raise your hand. I don't understand this, right? Come help me with this, Mr. Cowher. Like, sure, that's my job, right? Versus if everything's been hard from day one, like calculus, then, you know, they're just gonna have a miserable time all year. So TPR, you know, that, I love that phrase, the on-ramp.
Yeah. All right. Well, I will say, make sure that you're checking us out on our socials, and we'll make sure to let everyone know the next time John is putting on one of his classroom management courses. I have heard nothing but wonderful things about it, and people keep coming back, right? I think I've even seen people say they've done it multiple times.
I've had people take the same, and I'm like, you already took this course, you know? They're like, yeah, we'll do it again. I'm like, okay, well, you know, I'm not going to charge you but you're welcome to come and stay. So classroom management, man, because we don't just talk about classroom management. We talk about, you know, like it's geared towards language, you know, what do we call it these days? Acquisition-driven instruction teachers. So I'll share that information when it's ready.
Perfect. All right, everyone. Well, welcome to 2026. And go out there and slay.